Śrī-Bhagavān-uvārca Aham ityanyata buddhi Pramattasya yata hridi Utsāpati rajo koram Tato vaikari kammanaha Aham ityanyata buddhi Pramattasya yata hridi Utsāpati rajo koram Tato vaikari kammanaha Śrī Bhagavān uvārca The Supreme Personality of Godhead said Aham False identification with the material body and mind Iti Thus Anyata buddhi Illusory knowledge Pramattasya of one who is bereft of actual intelligence. Yata accordingly. Hridi within the mind. Utsāpati arises. Raja passion. Koram. Which brings terrible suffering. Tata, then, vaikārikam, originally in the mode of goodness. Manaha, the mind. Translation and purport by the followers of Śrīla Prabhupāda. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, My dear Uddhava, a person bereft of intelligence, first, falsely identifies himself with the material body and mind. And when such false knowledge arises within one's consciousness, material passion, the great cause of suffering, pervades the mind, which by nature is situated in goodness. Then the mind, contaminated by passion, becomes absorbed in making and changing many plans for material advancement. Thus, by constantly thinking of the modes of material nature, a foolish person is afflicted with unbearable material distress. Translation responsibly. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, My dear Uddhava, a person bereft of intelligence, first falsely identifies himself with the material body and mind. And when such false knowledge arises within one's consciousness, material passion, the cause of great suffering, pervades the mind, which by nature is situated in goodness. Then the mind, contaminated by passion, becomes absorbed in making and changing many plans for material advancement. Thus, by constantly thinking of the modes of material nature, a foolish person is afflicted with unbearable material desires. Purport. Those who are trying to enjoy material sense gratification are not actually intelligent, although they consider themselves most intelligent. Although such foolish persons themselves criticize the miseries of material life in innumerable books, songs, newspapers, television programs, civic committees, etc., they cannot desist from material life for a single moment. The process by which one is helplessly bound in illusion is clearly described here. A materialistic person is always thinking, Oh, what a beautiful house, I wish we could buy it. Or, what a beautiful woman, I wish I could touch her. Or, what a powerful position, I wish I could occupy it, and so on. The word sankalpa, sa, vikalpa, indicate that a materialist is always making new plans or modifying his old plans to increase his material enjoyment. although in his saner moments he admits that material life is full of suffering. The mind is created from the mode of goodness, as described in Sankhya philosophy, and the natural peaceful situation of the mind is pure love of Krishna, in which there is no mental disturbance, disappointment, or confusion. Artificially, the mind is dragged down to the lower platform of passion or ignorance, and thus one is never satisfied. Omagyan timanandasya ginanjana shalakaya chakshunmilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manogishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadamayam dadati svapadantikam vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindubhi evacha patitanam pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktivrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. So, as is stated in the purport, that originally our consciousness was Krishna conscious. We had pure consciousness. Pure consciousness means Krishna consciousness. Jivera, Swarupa, Hoy, Krishnera, Nitya, Das. The Swarup. What does Swa mean? Swa. Own, yeah, one's own, swa. Just like we say swaha, you know, when we do the jagyas, we say swaha, swa, my own, swaha, I give. We offer oblations. I am offering oblations. I give my own oblation. I give oblation to you. Swaha, like that. So that is swa. What does rupa mean? Form, yeah, all, beauty. Rupa manjari. Rupa Goswami, beautiful Manjari, beautiful Goswami. Form, Rupa, like that. So Swarupa means one's own beauty or one's original form. Right? Our original form, our original state of consciousness is Krishna consciousness. Jivera, the Jiva, Swarupa, his original state of consciousness, his original constitutional position, his original beauty, his Jivera Swarupa Hoy. Krishnera Nitya Das. He is Nitya Das, which means the eternal servant of Krishna. That is your original position. That is the original state of consciousness of the living entity. That is pure consciousness. So what happens is, originally we had pure consciousness. Originally we were in the spiritual world with Krishna. Prabhupada says this in the Krishna Consciousness Happening album, one of the first albums which Prabhupada recorded. Prabhupada is reading, and Prabhupada said, originally we were all Krishna conscious. But the nature of every soul in creation, the nature of God Himself, it says in the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, says Krishna is Swarat. What does Swarat mean? We said Swarat. Not that song. Independent. Yeah, independent. Swarat means Krishna can do whatever he wants. Because he is Krishna. He is all powerful. So because he is the Purusha, because he is the original controller and enjoyer, Krishna can do whatever he wants. So it says in the Bible, the man is created in the image of God. Because Krishna can do whatever he wants, we can also not do whatever we want. The similarity is that Prabhupada explains that the jivas in quantity different from Krishna, but in quality the same. So Krishna has independence. Swarat means he is independent. He can do whatever he wants. And in quality we are the same. We have independence. And we are created in his image. So we can do a certain amount of things. But we don't have the quantity that he has. Meaning that we cannot do whatever we want. We can do something we want, but we can't do whatever we want. Just like I can take off my watch, I can throw it over there, or I can throw it over there. That's my independence. But Krishna can do so much more. He has unlimited independence. So, each jiva was created with minute independence. Now, why are we given this independence? Because the spiritual world is based upon rasa or prema. That is the purpose of existence. Just like sometimes different philosophers, different religions, different spiritual groups, they try to understand what is the purpose of existence. Why are we here? This is one of the great questions of all time, philosophical questions. It's one of the original, perennial questions of philosophy. Why are we here? The reason we are here is to, the reason we were created is to exchange rasa or prema with God, with Krishna, like that. That's why Rupa Goswami, his most famous book, probably his most famous book is Bhakti Ras Amrita Sindhu. Bhakti Ras. We are meant to experience Bhakti Ras. The rasa, or the taste. Rasa means juice. Just like we have Ras Gula. Or Ras Malai. Ras means juicy gula. Prabhupada said, when you put a Ras Gula in your mouth, it should, when you bite into it, it should squeak. If it is authentic. If you go to Calcutta, or to Mayapur, to Bengal, the home of Ras Gulas, and then you take a Ras Gula, one of the original ones, they're like almost like a sponge. The consistency is amazing. And then you put it in your mouth, and when you bite it, it squeaks. It's like every bite's like that. So if you're in a public place, then it's okay if you're in Bengal, because everyone knows what's going on. But it makes this squeaky noise. Now what is that noise? That is from the ras. That is from the juice. If you take out all the juice, what will you get? Then you just get gula. Yeah, it's not the same. What would you prefer, a ras gula or a gula? A ras malai or just a malai? You just get the ball, but if it's dry, there's no taste, there's no pleasure. Right? The juice is what gives the pleasure. Same as in vegetables. In sabji, in all vegetables, the juice comes from soma. Soma means the moon. The rays of the moon are cool. The rays of the sun are hot. Just like if you go to Vrindavan and you do Govardhan Parikram, Giriraj Parikram, and you go around in the middle of the night when it's hot, in the hot season, you'll see that during the day if you do Parikram, when you step in the shadow, if you put your bare foot on the shadow, right, it is cooler than where the sun is touching, because the sun makes the earth hot. But then if you go around at night time in the hot season and you put your foot where the moonshine is coming, that is cooler than in the shadow. Because the light of the moon is cool. The light of the moon, the sun is hot. So, the light of the moon, Prabhupada explains, he explained in the Vedas, the soma, the light of the moon, is where the juice in the sabji, in the vegetables, that's where it comes from. That's where the vegetables get their juice. It comes from the light of the moon. So when the moonlight shines on the vegetables, then they become very juicy. So you know, when you have a juicy cauliflower or a juicy broccoli, pakora, which is offered to Krishna, then it is very satisfying. But if you get some dried up old piece of broccoli or dried up old piece of cauliflower, is it satisfying? There's no satisfaction. So this word rasa means juice. Juice means pleasure or satisfaction, like that. So the purpose of our existence is bhakti ras. It is to get the rasa or the pleasure or the satisfaction from doing bhakti to Krishna. Krishna, like that. That is our constitutional position. When we engage in devotional service to Krishna, we get rasa. Now, how much rasa can we experience? Right? Rupa Goswami says, amrita. Amrita means nectar, yeah, or mrita. Mrita means death. Death. Amrita means deathless, or it means immortality. Amrita means nectar. You take some nectar, you will live longer. So, amrita means immortality. Like that. So, bhakti ras, right? The pleasure you get from devotion is eternal. Right? It's not pleasure you get today and then it's gone tomorrow. Yeah? Just like today we all go to the Royal Melbourne Show and we go on the Mad Mouse. Right? And it's so much fun. And then tomorrow, no Mad Mouse. Life is the same. Life is the same again. Now life is boring again. Like that. So people are always looking for pleasure. But in the realm of bhakti, in the realm of the spiritual world, of Vaikuntha, of Goloka Vrindavan, the bhakti rasa is amrita. It is immortal. It is eternal. It does not stop and start, stop and start. The pleasure is anandam buddhi vardhanam. Anandam buddhi vardhanam means it is an ever-increasing ocean of bliss. It doesn't stop. It's not that, we had such a good time yesterday and today we have to wash all the pots. It's not like that in the spiritual world. The bliss increases moment by moment by moment by moment by moment, eternally. That is the nature. That is what the soul is looking for. So, bhakti ras amrita sindhu. Sindhu means an ocean. Just like to say it's Balaram Purnima. And after worshipping Lord Balaram, we take his prasad. And then we have one very nectarian beverage, which Lord Balaram is very fond of. What is it called again? Varuni, that's right. Varuni juice. So we take some Varuni juice. And when you drink it, you think, I wish I could drink an ocean of it. Because I have a material body, I can only drink 5 cups. But, right, if I was immortal, I could drink an ocean. Right? Because that is how much pleasure there is there. Yeah? So in spiritual life, in Krishna consciousness, it is bhakti ras amrita sindhu. It is an ocean. You get the ocean. You get the capacity to drink the ocean. You get the capacity to have an entire ocean of bliss. Right? It is not that you just get a little bit of bliss, but you get an unlimited ocean of bliss. Just like sometimes in the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, Krishna has one funny Brahmana friend who is a little plump. What is his name? Madhu Mangala. Krishna's very good friend. He makes Krishna laugh, right? Because they're all boys, so they go and play in the forest together. And he makes sounds under his arm. He goes, I can't make the sound, but you know the sound I'm talking about? Like that. And Krishna cracks up. Krishna just laughs. When Madhu Mangala does this, he makes this sound. Krishna just laughs. They make all sorts of jokes. They're always having fun together. So, one time, just near Varshana, where Radharani lives for 6 months of the year, then Krishna and the boys, they all jump through the window of one of the gopis, the elderly gopis, jumped into her window and got into her pantry, where she keeps all of her yogurt and makhan, her butter, right, and all of her dairy products. Right? So they all jumped in. And then they were all eating it. Right? And they're eating and eating and everyone's having good fun. And then they heard the gopi coming. Right? So then Krishna and all the cowherd boys, they all jumped out the window again. And then the last one to jump out was Madhu Mangala. But Madhu Mangala, because he was a little bit chubby, and because he'd eaten so much, he was a bit chubbier, he couldn't get out, so he was stuck. He was like halfway in the window. So Krishna and the boys were on the other side pulling him, and the gopi was on the other side with a spoon, and she was hitting him. Like that. So she was hitting him, and they were trying, he was going, like that. So finally, they got him out. They pulled him out, right? But his bottom was a little bit sore. So then he said to the gopis later on, he said, you have committed a great offense. You have offended the Brahmana. And if you do not mitigate offense, you will be subject to a great curse. And they said, so they all became like a little serious. They said, what do we do? He said, you have to give me 1,000,000 ladders. He was serious. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't 900,000 ladders. It was 1,000,000 ladders. So, there's a little kund when you go around the back of Varshana. It's called Krishna Kund. A little, when you come around the back and then you go back up before you go back up the hill, there's a little kund there. It's one of my favorite places in this universe. A beautiful little kund. And it's called Krishna Kund. And at that place, there is a simasan, a beautiful simasan on the far side of the kund. And that's where Madhu Mangal sat down. And that's where all the gopis came and they had to feed him 1,000,000 ladders. And he ate them. He sat there and he just went, 1,000,000 ladders. Gone, like that. And he said, okay, now your offense is mitigated. He said, now that your the curse is withdrawn. He said, now you have satisfied me. You have satisfied the Brahman, like that. So, this is the capacity in the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, there's no limitation on capacity. Just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he came to this world, then he was playing the role in his Anchalila, in his later pastimes, of a sannyasi. So when he was a sannyasi, he had to control what he ate. He could not eat too much, because sannyasis have to control what they eat. So he was eating a certain amount. But then when he went to Advaita Acharya's place to take prasad, there was so much prasadam. It was like a mountain. He says it was like a mountain of rice. Have you seen how much rice the Bengalis eat? Right? You go to Maipur. Like, I eat a lot. But these little Bengali guys, they're like about this big. They eat more than me. And I look at them and just like, you know, skinny little guy, he's only like that, and he eats like this much rice, easily, like this big pile of rice, right? But this pile of rice in the Chaitanya Charitamrita must have been like this high, like big pile of rice like this, with ghee sprinkled all over it, and so many sabjis and sucks and pakoras and so much prasad, like big area of prasad. And Lord Chaitanya sat down and he said to Advaita Acharya, he said, I'm a sannyasi. I'm just supposed to take a little bit of rice and sabji. He said, how am I supposed to eat all of this? And Advaita Acharya said, don't play games with us. And he said, in Jagannath Puri, you eat 56 offerings a day. You eat much more than this every day in Jagannath Puri. What is the problem for you? You are the unlimited Brahman. You are the unlimited Supreme Lord, Personality of Godhead. What is your limitation? Just take the prasad. So then Lord Chaitanya eats. And then Lord Nityananda sits down on the other side and he has the same amount of prasadam there. And he sits down and he says to Advaita Acharya, he says, why didn't you cook enough? He says, this much prasadam will only fill half of my belly. He said, today I have to fast. He said, why don't you cook enough? And Advaita Acharya and Nityananda Prabhu, they're always having, because this is Balaram and Mahavishnu, the Supreme Lord and the Supreme Lord. So they're always having competition between each other. So then Advaita Acharya says, you are just an avadut. We don't know where you come from. We don't know what your caste is. He said, why don't you just eat peacefully? He said, you just go around to Grihastha's house, it's causing trouble. So why don't you just sit down and just eat like that? And Nityananda Prabhu, he picked up a bit of rice and he threw it. And when it touches the leg, when that rice touches the leg of Advaita Acharya, Advaita Acharya goes, Haribo, Haribo, Haribo. He goes into ecstasy when he gets touched by the rice which is thrown from the plate of Lord Nityananda. This is the competition which is always going on with them. There's one place in Jagannath Puri called Indrajumna Sarovara, one beautiful lake. And all the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they used to have pastimes there. They used to have water sports. And sometimes Advaita Acharya would lie down on his back like Anantasesh. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would lie on top of him, lie back on him, like Mahavishnu. And they would just float around like that. And then other times everyone would have water fights and everyone would start fighting, big water fights which go on. So then the water fights were going on, and everyone was pairing off, you know, against each other. Ramananda Roy versus Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya. And normally Ramananda Roy and Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya are very sober, but they were just playing like little boys, just splashing and fighting and like that. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to Swarup Damana, he said, go and tell them, they're supposed to be respectable sages. He said, what are they playing like little kids for? And then Advaitacharya versus Lord Nityananda, a big like this. So they're fighting with each other, Advaitacharya and Nityananda Prabhu. And then Nityananda Prabhu, then he defeated Advaitacharya. And Advaitacharya started calling him bad names. He said, who are you? And you know, we don't even know what Avadhut, you know, he just caused trouble for the whole world. We don't even know what caste you're from. You know, like this. What is your purpose? You know, like that. And then this is the kind of Leela, the part. So this is called Bhakti Ras. The Bhakti Ras Amrita Sindhu. It is unlimited. What you can get from devotional service, you cannot get from any other place. That is why we were created. That is the purpose of our creation. Right? The purpose of our existence is to taste Bhakti Ras, right? Unlimitedly. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya says within the Shikshastika, within the first verse, he says, Anandam Buddhi Vardhanam. It is an unlimited, ever-expanding ocean of bliss. Now, this is what we originally have. This is our original consciousness. But then, when we come into this material world, Srila Prabhupada explains, it is just like a drop of water which falls from the sky. As the drop of water falling from the rain cloud falls, it is pure. But as soon as that drop of water touches the earth, it becomes adulterated. It becomes contaminated. It becomes muddy. It becomes impure. So similarly, Prabhupada explains that originally we were all Krishna conscious. But every living entity has minute independence. So we use that minute independence in the wrong way. And therefore Prabhupada explains that this material world is like a reformatory center. Right, is a place that you come in order to be rectified or reformed in your consciousness. Because we are meant to love Krishna, but love must be given independently. And when we misuse that natural tendency or propensity to love Krishna, then Krishna gives us another abode. He says, okay, you will go to another place. If you want to use your independence away from me, I will give you another place. Now Krishna is so kind that Krishna gives us an entire universe, a chetra, he explains in the Bhagavad Gita. Chetra means a place, right? So this place, Krishna doesn't just say, okay, here's Melbourne, enjoy yourself. Right, you want to be independent from me? Okay, here's it. No, no, he says, here's Melbourne, here's Australia, here's Earth, here's the universe. Go down there and try to have some fun. Right? And when you've got it out of your system, come back. You're always welcome back to the spiritual world. So, this material creation is called Devidam. It's explained in the Brahma Samhita. Devidam means it is the abode of Durga. Now, who is Mother Durga? What does Durga literally mean? Durga. Yeah, fortress. Yeah, it means Durga. It means fortress. It has different meanings. Yeah, it means difficult. Right? It will be a difficult time. Right? That is the nature of this material world. We come here to enjoy, and what do we get? Mainly you get frustration. It's interesting because you see, Burujan Prabhu was explaining one time that when people are young, you see their faces are very bright. Mm-hmm. You see teenagers very bright, like, yeah, where's the world? Right? Where's the Royal Melbourne Show? Let's go, like, I can't wait to enjoy, like that. And then they get into their 20s, right? And then there's a change that takes place. From the age of 20, 21 to 29, you see like the expression on the face gradually changes. Right? And then you get to your 30s, right? And that's when it all begins to kind of turn around. And then when you get to 40, just like I was speaking to one friend the other day who's 48, he said, yes, I'm going through my midlife crisis. That's the 40s. You get into your 40s and then you think, what in the hell is my life about? Why am I here? And what have I done? Why am I living? You know, people think like this in the 40s, and then 50s if you make it, right? Then you're lucky if you get past the 50s, and 60s is just downhill. That's it. 60, 70, 80. Prabhupada said, after 50, there is no hope for sense gratification. It's finished, even though they try. You know, just like you see the old men put on their Hawaii shirts and their board shorts and walk around up and down Beaconsfield Parade on the weekend. It's ridiculous. You're finished, man. Where's your pleasure? But still, the living entity is stubborn. He tries to extract the last, the Prahlad Maharaj says, chewing the chewed. Right? It's already been all used up. Right? You get the piece of sugar cane, put it through the mixer. There's no juice left in it. The guy throws it on the road. Right? And then the cow comes and chews it up. Nothing left in it, but he just chews the last bit in and he spits it out. And then the crow comes and the crow tries to get something out of it. There's nothing left. Right? But he tries to get some pleasure. That's the material world. We're so stubborn. We try to get more pleasure, more, but there's nothing left. There's nothing to enjoy. But still you try to enjoy. Just like my grandparents, they're 83, like that, nearly dead, almost, ready to expire from this world, but still trying to get some enjoyment from this world. My grandfather was the head of Greater Union Cinemas in Australia. Means the movie industry. You have Hoyts Village, Greater Union. Now they have Reading. They have like different groups who control the film industry. So he was in charge of Greater Union. So his whole life is only based on Hollywood, right? Films. That's all he does. And even to this day, he's 83. He watches at least one, or sometimes two or three, movies every day. New movies every day. That's what he does with his life. And there's one room in his house which the wall is 13 foot long. He has a movie screen. You go into this room, it's like a theatre, like a mini theatre, right? When I was growing up, when I was a kid, he had the garage out the back. If you open up the garage door, it was a mini theatre. He had seats in there and a proper projector and, all these kind of things. That's all he does. But it's just, he's just trying to extract pleasure when there's no pleasure left, right? You're just spending the last years of your life in illusion, in fantasy. Now, this material world is already maya. It is already illusion. And then you go to the movies, and then you absorb yourself in an illusion within an illusion. Maya, that which is not. We're already in that which is not, and then we get in that which is not not. Right? It just gets further and further and further. It's more implicated. It's false. But still we have to try to extract some pleasure, some pleasure, some pleasure. Just like you go to the Royal Melbourne Show, you see all the kids. They all get out of the car. They're all excited. Right? But it's funny because we used to go down there and collect at the Royal Melbourne Show in the car parks. And especially on the big days, like the Saturday and the Sunday and the show day on the Thursday, we'd go down and we would collect. And it was funny because the people who came in, like after 10 o'clock, it means they'd been in a traffic jam or a line to get into the Royal Melbourne Show for 2 hours. And some of them had driven like from, say, Albury, Wodonga. So they'd already driven 3 hours, then you have to wait nearly 1 hour, 2 hours just to get inside because so many cars are trying to get in. So I remember one time then we went up to someone and gave them a smile sticker and said, would you like to give a donation? And the lady got out of the car and everyone was so fried from being locked in the car for 3 hours or 4 hours or 5 hours. She just gave me her purse. She said, just take it. She just gave me her purse. She said, just take it. I don't care. She said, I don't care. This whole thing's just, I don't care. That's her pleasure. Your big day at the Royal Melbourne Show, so much fun, isn't it? Haven't even got there yet and everyone's fried. Everyone gets out of the car. The kids are screaming, I want to go to the toilet. I want to go to the toilet. I've been in the car for 2 hours. There is no toilet. What do you want me to do? There is no toilet. There's all these little kids passing water and, all over the place in between all the cars. And the parents are fried. Where's the pleasure? It's false. It's illusory. Right? This is Durga. Durga means it is difficult. Understand when you come here, it is difficult. It is stamped with authority, as Burujamparu always says. The material world is already stamped. Just like if you mail something from Australia to India, then they put a big stamp on it, coming from Australia, stamped, it's authorized like that. So similarly, this material world is already stamped by Krishna. Dukalayam, Ashashwatam. That's it. Go and, now, go and enjoy. Go and enjoy yourself. Dukalayam, Ashashwatam. Please enjoy yourself. Welcome to the material world. You will have so much fun here, we promise you. Please come, please come. Just like you go to Dreamland, you go to the Gold Coast, and then you have Dreamland and Movie Land and Wet and Wild and what's the other one called?
SeaWorld
and Warner Brothers and like all these different worlds. So the best one is Dreamland. Right? So you go into Dreamland, but where's the pleasure? Right? Every single ride you have to go on, you have to wait half an hour, 45 minutes max. Right? So everyone, and it's funny because you're standing in the line waiting to get on the ride and you hear the conversations, everyone's saying, I'm so fried, why do we have to wait? Why did we even come here? And then you get on a ride for 3 minutes, right? Have your fun and then get off. And half the people who get on the ride nearly throw up. Or I saw one guy get on the ride and the guy got on the ride and he was too big. Like he's too like big and he couldn't fit on the ride. Like they couldn't like, you know, strap him in, like put him in. Because these rides go upside down and everything. And then he was embarrassed in front of 100 people who were waiting for him who were fried to get on the ride, and then they had to wait for this guy who couldn't get in, and then he had to get off embarrassed in front of everyone. I mean, where's your pleasure? What are you looking for? What is it you're trying to enjoy? There is nothing to enjoy. The material world is false, right? It is a false, that's why it is called Maya. Maya means that which is not. It is not pleasure, it is false. It appears to be full of ananda, bliss. Actually, it's nirananda. Nirananda means it is unblissful. Or, how do you say it? What's another word? Miserable. Yeah, it's just miserable. Right? You're looking for a pleasure, but you just get misery. That is the nature of the material world. So it says here that when we first come to the material world, we try to use our independence separate from Krishna. It says that, describes in this verse, Krishna explains, and this is explained also in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam by Kapiladeva in his teachings, that the mind is in the, originally when we come to the material world, our mind, which we're covered by, the soul is covered by the subtle element called mind, that is in the mode of goodness. It is in sattva gun. That's why these days people, they go to meditation groups and they go to different groups just to try to make the mind peaceful. Everyone wants peace of mind, because in Kali Yuga one thing you do not get is peace of mind. Right? What is the symptom of the age of Kali? Right? People are always disturbed. So people think the success in life, people actually think life is successful if my mind is peaceful. That's actually not success, that is just a prerequisite to success. Krishna says that in the Bhagavad Gita, he said there cannot be happiness without peace. So yes, you need a peaceful mind to taste the bliss of devotional service, but it is not the goal. The goal is not just to have a peaceful mind. The goal is to taste the nectar of Krishna's service, which means sometimes you'll be peaceful, sometimes you won't be peaceful. But the main goal for the devotee is not whether my mind is peaceful, but whether Krishna is happy. Right? And sometimes that means, okay, I'm in distress, but that's okay, this is just temporary, as long as Krishna is happy. So the nature of the mind when you first come to the material world, it is in sattva gun, it is in the mode of goodness, like that. But then what happens is that by association with the material energy, then your mind becomes over-influenced by the mode of passion and ignorance. Now when your mind becomes too much influenced by the mode of ignorance, what takes its place is that you always think of the past. Just like we have a type of music in the West called the blues. Right? So the blues, when everyone sings the blues songs, they're always thinking, lamenting about what happened in the past. Oh, my baby left me, and now I'm so blue.
Atul Krishna does very good renditions of this, especially when he's giving Bhagavatam class. He gets into like the whole thing like that. So our mind, when it comes too much influenced by the mode of ignorance, then we lament what happened in the past. Oh, this happened to me, that happened to me. Some people spend their whole life like that. Oh, that happened to me when I was 20, that happened to me when I was 30, that happened to me when I was 40, that happened to me when I was 50, that happened to me when I was 60, that happened to me when I was 70, now I'm 80, and that happened to me yesterday, and then my whole life is just mode of ignorance. Lamenting, lamentation. Krishna says, nah. The material world is sochiti and kanchiti. And it is lamentation and hankering. So when our mind becomes too much under the influence of the mode of ignorance, we think like that. And when the mind becomes too much influenced by the mode of passion, then we are always thinking in the future. Right? In the mode of passion, we always think, I will get this much money tomorrow. I will get that much money next year. If I work really, 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 really hard, right? I'm 20 now, but if I work really, really hard, right, in the mode of passion, when I'm 50, I'll retire and I'll have a house and I'll be happy. Which is a ridiculous philosophy, because as Prabhupada said, there's no happiness after 50. Right? Sense gratification is not possible properly. You lose your faculty, you lose your ability. You cannot enjoy anymore. So people live in the mode of passion always for the future. Right? So devotional service cannot be effectively, or most effectively, cannot be practiced in the mode of ignorance or the mode of passion. It's interesting, in the introduction to the Nectar of Instruction, the Upadeshamrita, Prabhupada writes, this book helps one go from the mode of ignorance and the mode of passion and situate oneself in the mode of goodness, in sattva gun. Now it's interesting, because that is a bhakti shastra. The Nectar of Instruction and the Nectar of Devotion are bhakti shastras. They're about bhakti, they're not about the modes of material nature. But Prabhupada writes in the introduction to the Nectar of Instruction that this book will help you come to the mode of goodness. Because devotional service is most effective in the mode of goodness. If you're in the mode of ignorance, if you're in the mode of passion, right, your devotional service, you will get effect, you will get result, but it will not be the full result. The full result is actually attained from the mode of goodness. That's why we practice a lifestyle in the mode of goodness. Because then bhakti, as Prabhupada explains, the mode of goodness is a springboard to shuddha sattva, or pure goodness. You practice devotional service in the mode of goodness, you can transcend into pure goodness eventually by purification. Hrishikena, Hrishikesha, Sevanam Bhakti Uchite. You purify your consciousness, your senses. So what does it mean to live in the mode of goodness, right? It means that we rise early in the morning. This is the first symptom of the mode of goodness, right? You rise early in the morning. You attend Mangala Arati, which means early. You have to rise. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, what is daytime for the introspective sage is nighttime for the materialistic person, and vice versa. I remember when I used to live just behind the temple here in Little Page Street, then sometimes I'd get up for Mangalati and I'd come down like at 20 past 4 and begin to walk down the back alley. I remember one time my next door neighbour, he just got home in the taxi. 20 past 4, he just got out of the car and he was intoxicated. A nice guy. We used to talk to him. And he said to me, what are you doing? And I said, I'm going to the temple. And he said, you're crazy. And I looked at him, and I gave him a look. I didn't say anything, but he knew what I was thinking. I said, no, man, you're crazy. Because you're going to bed, I'm getting up. One is tamagun, one is sattvagun. So by sattvagun, then you rise and you transcend and you go into the mode of pure goodness. By mode of ignorance and mode of passion, you'll never get to pure goodness. It is not possible. Right? Devotional service must be practiced in sattvagun. Then the mind becomes peaceful. Then everything becomes clear. You get mental clarity, and then you can practice devotional service effectively. One who's in the mode of ignorance is always thinking of the past. One who's in the mode of passion is always thinking of the future. One in the mode of goodness is present in the moment. And that is when devotional service becomes effective. Just like if you're chanting your rounds, if your mind, while you're chanting, right, practically it's like an automatic situation which takes place for most devotees. They pick up their beads, they begin to chant the Maha Mantra, and their mind just goes, right? Practically just goes to another place in the universe somewhere. So quite often when we're chanting our japa, our minds are thinking about stuff that happened previously. That means our consciousness is the mode of ignorance. Oh, this happened to me, that happened to me, this person did that to me, this person just said this to me. And this goes on and on and on, and we spend our whole japa time just thinking about something which happened in the past. That's a mode of ignorance. Or we start to chant our japa, and all we're thinking about is our what we're doing today, what we're doing tomorrow, what we're doing next year, what we're doing in 20 years, what we're doing in the next lifetime, what we're doing in 7 lifetimes from now, like that. We just begin to think of things which happened in the future. Right? So this means your mind is under the sway of the mode of passion. So practicing sadhana bhakti in the mode of ignorance or the mode of passion, it doesn't have great effect. Some effect is there, but the effect is minimized. Whereas when one practices in the mode of goodness, that means I'm present here at the moment. I'm listening to the mantra which I'm chanting at this moment. Burujan Prabhu teaches us this on his japa retreats, right? Don't think when you're chanting, don't think, oh, what was the previous mantra like? Or don't think, oh, what will the next mantra be like? Right? That you'll never get the full effect of your japa. If you're always thinking, oh, my rounds so far have not been so good, my next lot of rounds will be... No, you don't think like that. You just listen to the mantra that you're chanting right at this moment. That is called Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness means I'm conscious of Krishna right at this moment. Not, oh, I'll be conscious of Krishna in 5 minutes. Or I wasn't conscious of Krishna 5 minutes ago. That's not actually Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness means it must be practiced in this moment. Because this moment is only the moment we have. We don't have anything else right now. We only have this moment we're in right now. And what does Krishna say in the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita? Yam yam, vapi, smaram, bhavam. That at the moment of death, which can come at any moment, which could come now, could be the next moment, could be the next moment after that, if you're conscious of Krishna at that moment, then you will rise to Krishna. In our Bhakti Vaibhav course, then we study the 4th canto, the teachings of Dhruva Maharaj, and Prabhupada makes some very powerful purports. One of the purports which Prabhupada gave at the end of chapter 8 and the end of chapter 9, and I think maybe the end of chapter 10, then Srila Prabhupada says that if you are chanting the Hare Krishna mantra at the time of death, Krishna will deliver you from the material energy. Prabhupada makes very powerful statements. These are benedictions. These are blessings. Prabhupada says you will transcend this material energy. You will be liberated if you are chanting Hare Krishna at the time of death. That is the test. That is what everything we're doing is about. Our whole life as a devotee, decades that we spend as a devotee, 2 decades, 3 decades, 4 decades, 50 years, or however long it is we spend as a devotee, it is all for one thing. What are we conscious of at the time of death? If we are conscious of Krishna, Prabhupada says you will go to Krishna. In this age, you just have to be remembering Krishna at the time, which means chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra at the time of death. Then you will transcend. Then we will go back to Godhead. So, the conditioned soul, originally we were Krishna conscious, but when we come to this material world, we just experience great misery. So now, it is a process of sadhana. Sadhana means practice. It means reversing the situation. We've come here for millions of lifetimes, we've wasted our time and our energy. Now we just have to do an about face. Instead of having Krishna as Bahya Mukh, which means having our back towards Krishna, we just have to turn around and face Krishna once again. And then we focus our consciousness on Krishna once again. In this lifetime, it is possible to go back to the spiritual world. Prabhupada says in the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj, he said, all of my disciples should go back to Godhead in this lifetime. But you have to be serious, like Dhruva Maharaj. You have to take that example, and then you will attain the goal. So we'll stop here, and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed.
Sometimes we plan
means that while we're planning something, we have to be in the mode of goodness while planning it. It means that our lives have to be operated in the mode of goodness. Because quite often you'll see devotees rushing to one place or rushing to the next place. Or like, did you ever see Prabhupada rush? Is there any video footage of Prabhupada like running, you know, to get to the temple or to... No, Prabhupada was always perfectly poised, always perfectly... everything was always perfectly timed like that. He was never late like that, right? Prabhupada was just... Everything was perfect. Why is that? Because his consciousness was situated in the Shuddha Sattva. So we should practice devotional service in that way. So we should plan things, obviously, because if you don't plan, then everything falls apart. That's part of the mode of goodness, being organized. But it's the way in which we do things. It's the mode in which we operate. If you read Kapila's teachings in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, then he discusses devotional service in the mode of ignorance, and devotional service in the mode of passion, and devotional service in the mode of goodness, and they're vastly different. One in the mode of ignorance is always angry with others. Always, he's doing the service, but offending other people while doing the service. So you're making a few steps forward, but you're coming a few steps back. So it's not so effective. Mode of passion, always attached to fruitive results. I have to do so much. And then what is usually the underlying motivation? So I will get recognition. So I'll be recognized. So people will see me like that. So they will notice me. That is pratishtha. That is recognition. So mode of ignorance, mode of passion, means that our devotional service is not being performed in the proper state of consciousness. Whereas by practicing the mode of goodness, then that will lead us to being in pure goodness. Our example of pure devotional service is Srila Prabhupada. Because Prabhupada was in Shuddha Sattva, he was in pure goodness. So if you watch video footage of Prabhupada, or you read the Leelamrita, or you read his books, you understand what is pure devotional service. How a pure devotee acts, how he operates, what is his mode of operation. Is that okay? Or? Good. Rasa, did you? Up to you. Okay. Because those who are in the mode of ignorance while doing devotional service, they offend others. So they may be doing the service, but along the way they commit offences and they disturb others and they're always passionate and everything's like that. Prabhupada didn't have that kind of air about him. That time that you're talking about was in Amsterdam, and it was on public television. And Prabhupada was doing an initiation ceremony on public television. It was a live broadcast. And Prabhupada was angry. On live television, he was saying, you know, this is wrong and that is wrong, and, you know, like you said, there was fruit salad instead of fruits. And Prabhupada was just, he was just blasting everyone like that. And at one point, Prabhupada was very frustrated, and there was a bhakta who was standing next to Prabhupada. Prabhupada was sitting on a vyasasan, and there was a bhakta next to Prabhupada, and he was chanting japa. He's like a new guy, just walking into the temple. And he leaned over to Prabhupada and he said, just chant Hare Krishna, Prabhupada. And Prabhupada looked at him, and then he picked up his beads and he went, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Krishna. So we see his consciousness was pure, like that. The difference is when Prabhupada, even though he was angry, in the position of guru or in the position of authority, then you can be angry with others for their benefit, like that. But not in such a way that it would cause ill feelings in the heart or the consciousness. When a senior devotee, when he affectionately corrects us, or she affectionately corrects us, then we do not feel hurt by it. We feel, no, this person is actually doing this for my benefit, because there is a relationship established. So that is the criteria.
Otherwise, we may commit offences to others. Like that. We may chastise them and we become too heavy and overreact to people and chastise them too much. And there's not enough care and affection to back it up. And then everything becomes mode of ignorance, mode of passion. So the devotional service is not effective like that. Does that answer what you're... Is that okay? Like I said, that the basis of Vaishnav relationships is affection, like that. So that is the underlying, that is the underlying or overriding mood of the relationships. So when that is genuinely there and devotees actually care about each other, then if there is some disagreement or misunderstanding or correction which takes place from a senior to a junior, there's no feeling of enmity there, like that. So it's what you're, once again, it comes, if you're too much in passion or ignorance, you'll commit offences in general, you mistreat people in general. If you're more in the mode of goodness, right, and actually in the proper state of consciousness, then you will treat people properly. So then when you do have to become angry, because it's not that anger is not bona fide, but then your chastisement will be taken properly, right, it'll be received properly, like that. So that is the what we have to rise to. Anyone else have a question?
Just a comment. My understanding about goodness is that a certain devotional service that we have to be regulated. And steady in our service, steady in our devotional practices. But when it comes to steady out the service itself, we have to engage our natures, because you can't be something that you're not. It's just, that becomes false. You can't make out that you know your goodness when you're not necessarily suited to sacramental behaviour, for example. So the regulated practice of devotional service makes us steady and tempers our natural propensities to act. But we also have to use, because in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that whatever you do, and of course there's going to be people more influenced by the mode of passion, more influenced by the mode of goodness, more influenced by the mode of ignorance, but Krishna says at the end of the 18th chapter, whatever you do, you should engage in my service, right? So, at least practical devotional service, practical application, mode of goodness for us is to rise early in the morning, to chant our chapter, to worship the deities, all those type of things. And we then steady in our activities, in our behaviour, for somebody who's, a pop, I should say, for example, we're not going to get him to do vocal time class, because but the fact that he's steadily doing his service and in a regulated fashion, that makes him his propensities, if you like, purified. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, there's also a difference between guna and karma, because karma means our activity, what we do for Krishna. Like, because the Vaishyas will act in one way, the Chachas will act in one way, so they all do their karma differently, because they have different duty and different work in this world. But the guna means everyone should be rise to the mode of goodness. So even though one is doing the activity according to a particular mode or particular propensity, but while doing the activity, he does it in a timely, orderly, punctual, clean fashion. So that's mode of goodness. So the guna, so the guna is mode of goodness, but the karma may be according to... Yeah, but say for example, someone's a pot washer. So you can say, well, the activity may be whatever it is, but if it's done in the mode of goodness, then that person is doing it
even though you can say, well, the activity is whatever, 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 or external, or someone's fighting, you know, well, fighting a battle, then you go into a mode of passion. But generally, when we're doing certain activities, then we may do the activity, but it's the mode in which we do the activity. Because you can wash the pots in the mode of ignorance, you can wash them in the mode of passion, or you can wash them in the mode of goodness.
Well, you find people that are doing all sorts of things in any particular given day, you know what I mean? But the fact that they stick it steadily, and that they do it for Krishna, ultimately, you know, that what we do, we ultimately do it for the pleasure of our guru, we do it for the pleasure of Krishna. Despite the fact that on any particular given day, all sorts of things may happen, we may be thinking all sorts of.
Yeah, but eventually, as time goes by, we have to raise the consciousness.
Sure.
Raise the consciousness to the point where while you're doing the pots, you are thinking, I'm doing these pots for Radha and Krishna. That is, that's the point. I mean, that's what, you know, Prabhupada developed ISKCON for.
Yeah.
Whatever activity we do, but we do the activity for Krishna, and we do it, eventually, we do it in Krishna consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's leading to.
Yeah, that's why, especially. It has occurred to me, and that, you know, that rising early in the morning, going off the lake to Jama and Japa, doing those steady sadhana practices, and that's for everybody. Whether you're a sutra, vaishya, chachya, brahmana, everybody gets that mode of goodness. Not mode of goodness, but actually devotional service. I'm not saying it's a sutra, the form of the right consciousness. So everybody gets that, regardless of, you know, what background you have. And then from there, we're able to then engage our daily activities based on that purification. And like you're saying, our karma, based on that goodness, is then purified by the fact that we're able to remember Krishna.
Mm.
Then whatever you do becomes devotional service. So It's a pretty unique kind of concept.
Yeah, because someone might come, like a congregation member might come for the full morning program, and then he goes to work, and his work is that he sells jewelry. You know, he sells gold. So that may be a, you know, he could do that passionately. In other words, attached to the result. He could do that in the mode of ignorance, be unpleasant. Or he can do it in the purified state of consciousness and offer the results to Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't matter, as you're pointing out, it doesn't matter what the external activity is, it's the consciousness we perform the activity in.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. And are we thinking of Krishna? That's mm-hmm. that's where it's all leading to.
Yeah.
If you will.
If you saw Prabhupada getting angry, well, there are occasions where Prabhupada was very active. I'll give you an example. When Prabhupada was preparing for the wedding of Mukunda and Janaki, Janaki's sister,
Jamuna,
came, right? And he got Jamuna to prepare some potato, you know, kachoris. Right? She was in the kitchen for something like 7 hours preparing all the preparations. At the same time, she said Prabhupada prepared 15 preparations, all for 50 people. Right? So, you know, if Prabhupada had the kitchen, he must have been busy and active, because, you know, you don't prepare 15 preparations for 50 people, just like, you know, just on a cruise mode, you actually have to be very active. So you might say, oh boy, he's really passionate, powerful person. Just cool, 15 preps. But actually he wasn't, because he was doing that for Krishna, obviously. You know what I mean? So the externals.
But I think you look at the moment, because when you observe Prabhupada, because you see him on certain, you know, video footage where he is, as you say, he's doing like what would be externally passionate activity, but it's a very different mode of operandus in terms of, like, you know, you can see someone, they're just in the mode of passion. Where you can see Prabhupada, he's poised, you know, as he said, clean as you go. Like, he washes all the pots as he goes. So he's just very organized, very poised. You don't seem like ever losing, like he's equanimity, or, you know, it's a different state of consciousness to just be purely in the mode of passion. Because some of us, we just do things in the mode of passion, then we offer the result to Krishna.
No, he was very active.
Yeah. No, I didn't say that devotees are not active or they should not be active, but it's how you do the activity.
Yeah.
Like that. Any other questions or comments? What was that? I gave it back to her. Yeah, she gave me a donation. You had a point.
As a consequence of devotional service performed in mode of passion.
Mode of passion. It's spoken by Kapila Deva in the third canto. You look there also. The main quality is one becomes very attached to the results. In other words, you are attached. Like, I did this for Krishna. Others will recognize that I did this for Krishna. I did so much, but taking some recognition for yourself, being attached to the fruit, or actually being attached to the fruit. When the fruit is meant to be offered to Krishna, but then you have some attachment to that fruit. I'll cook a nice cake because I like this type of cake. I'll offer it to Krishna, but I will enjoy the fruit. That's mode of passion. Like that. Whereas mode of goodness is more detached. I will cook the tea, I'll offer it to Krishna. Maybe I will get some, maybe I will not get some. Pure devotional service means he doesn't even think of anything. Is Krishna happy with this cake? Krishna always looks after me anyway, I always get up prasadam, but I'm not even thinking anything for myself. Like that. Yeah. You'll see in Radhika. You'll see in Jayapur at the Radha Govinda temple, when they hand out the prasadam from the altar, everyone gets like a little tiny bit of prasadam, and then all the pilgrims go around the back of the parikram mark, and then everyone stands there. It's like hundreds of people doing it. Everyone stands there and distributes it to everyone else, because they understand that is pure devotion. That's what happens in the spiritual world. You get a little bit of prasadam, which is coming directly from Radha and Krishna, and then you distribute it to everyone else. You keep a little bit for yourself, like that, but you distribute to everyone. So that is bhakti, that is pure consciousness.
So now the outcomes come from pure sattva, from devotion service performing in pure sattva, and goodness of passion is different, little different, or can the same?
Pure devotional service means anyavi lashita shunyam, jnana kamadhyanapritam. It means I have no other desire than Krishna anushilanam. Right? Is Krishna happy? Right? That is pure devotional service. Is Krishna happy by my activity? Is Krishna happy by my words, by my speech, by my activity, right? And by my thoughts? Is Krishna happy? That is pure devotional service. That's what Rupa Goswami defines pure devotional service as. I think so. Jiva Goswami says that he used to use that criteria to understand the vana of someone when they came to devotional service. and someone came out distressed, then he would understand they're coming from a Sudra Varna. If someone came wanting wealth, then they're coming from a Vaishya Varna. If someone was inquisitive, they're coming from Kshatriya Varna. And if someone wanted knowledge, then they're coming from Brahminical Varna. So that's in the 7th chapter of the Gita. In the 9th chapter, then Krishna speaks of pure devotional service. What is actually unmotivated, uninterrupted devotional service like that. Any other points? Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.